Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the May 20th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, it's great to have you join us on this Sunday afternoon, and as events early yesterday morning proved once again, never a dull moment here on the Space Coast. We'll get you updated in just a moment here on the status of the next Falcon 9 launch attempt. We'll review what happened Saturday, and we'll get reaction to what's going on in our space program with my guest, Robert Perlman of Collect Space, who'll be joining us soon by phone. Plus, my longtime friend and fellow graduate of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, the director of Spaceport Operations for Space Florida, Patrick McCarthy, is here in the studio today as well. Good afternoon, Pat.
Good afternoon, Jim. Great to be here.
Good to be here. Hey, do we need to have a disclaimer now right up front about that you're here on your own time today and not an official representative of Space Florida?
I suppose we could do that, yes.
Okay, well, consider it done. So say we all.
I'm safe.
Your questions and comments also welcome today. All of you listening in, please feel free to, well, give us a call anytime during the program today. Send us an email if you're a little shy about phoning in. No question too dumb. No opinion not worthy of at least some discussion. Our phone number is always 768-1240, and the area code is 321 if you need it. Our email address that we monitor all the time here, spacetalking@AOL.com. Also, later on in the program, we're going to lighten things up a bit, see how well my guest Robert Perlman and I can do handling some space trivia questions that Pat's prepared for us here today. So when we do get to that segment coming up after the bottom of the hour, you're invited to either phone in or email your space-related trivia questions and see if you can, what Johnny Carson used to say, call it stump the chump. Well, we're a bunch of chumps here,
right.
At least.
No, that's click and clack.
Click and clack. Space chumps or space chimps, who knows? Anyway, we'll give you a few minutes to think that over and participate again later on in the program if you want. Let's start. First of all, we're not going to have any time for orbital inclinations today. I do want to talk for a little bit about the SpaceX launch attempt Saturday morning out at Launch Complex 40, kind of remind you what happened, and basically that's it. It aborted. They counted down. They had a great countdown. The weather was perfect. There wasn't a single technical hiccup that I could hear on the loops at all during the entire operation. Great anticipation, great excitement. The countdown commences. We get down to terminal count. Our good friend NASA commentator George Diller, oh my gosh, do I feel sorry for him because if you're going to jump off the bridge as a good friend, would you follow him? You know, I forget what the exact cliche is on that, but I followed over the cliff with George Diller. George counts it down. 3, 2, 1, lift. And you could just hear him. And by the way, George was on last week, and we were kind of actually kidding a little bit about this, about whether or not he could actually see the rocket on the pad of the launch, and he can't. He's in a building. In fact, he's in a building over by you, Pat, over at Space Florida, isn't that
That's
right?
Correct. That's correct.
Off gate one? And,
just outside the gate at the Air Force Station.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's in this building. He's looking on the computer. I'm looking, you know, I'm doing commentary, too, for WMMB. Happy to be up and doing that on the air. They count down 3, 2, 1. I can't see the rocket on the pad either. I'm following video signals and live audio, and I've got the live audio from George in my ear. But the pictures that I see on my computer screen are about 5 or 7 seconds behind reality. In fact, we talked about this last week when someone called in and said, well, you know, when you call that Atlas launch, the thing lifts off, and a few seconds later you say liftoff. And, Pat, I think you even were out there once, and you said, you know, it was like 10 seconds after it lifted off, you're finally telling me it lifted off.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was a noticeable delay.
So why is that? Well, it has to do with the radio system, first of all. I mean, to finish that part of the story, it's the fact that when I speak something right now, it takes about 4, 5, 6 seconds for the signal to go from my voice through the microphone into the computers that process the signal, prepare it for broadcast, send it to the transmitter, and get it out there. Now, you'd think that'd all be speed of the light, but no, it's not. There's some processing time. So I have to, same kind of thing's happening with the video. I'm watching 6X, so I have to hear George. So when George says liftoff, that's when I know it's lifted off, because you never say liftoff as a commentator until it actually gets off the ground. So George says liftoff, and it's like he couldn't stop himself from saying, oh, we've had cutoff, he says, like a big question in his voice. And I feel sorry for him, and he thought he saw motion. He thought he saw something happening. So the engines fire, all nine engines, the Merlin engines fire. What has happened since then, they've gone in and looked at all the data, and they've done some inspections. What happened to cause the abort was that a computer detected that the chamber pressure in the number 5 engine, there are 9 engines at the bottom. In fact, it reminds me of the Hollywood Squares when you see the thing laying on its side. You know, 9 big giant engines sitting there all in one big square, one big cube. The middle engine, number 5, detects this high pressure in the chamber pressure, and so it cut off. The engine's kind of like, in a way, like shuttle, and really all liquid-fueled engines, they start up, and they have to go through this cycle of ramping up to full speed, like what Gwynne Shotwell said, the president of SpaceX said, you know, it's like the commercial airliner at the end of the runway revving up your engines before you take off, before you release the brakes and take off. Well, that's the same kind of thing that was happening here. They're revving up their engines, making sure that everything looks good. The computer saw something and called the cutoff literally with a half a second left before the bolts would have released and the thing would have taken off. That's good news. The good news is that the computer detected that. The good news is that they did not fly when there was an unsafe condition. And, you know, certainly because of the private nature, the commercial nature, the last thing you want is any kind of a failure. Do you consider the launch abort a failure? No, I don't think you should. It's a delay. It's a problem. It's not something you want to experience. But like everything else in rocketry, you only fly when it's time to fly. So they went in there. They looked at the inspection since yesterday morning. They did find a faulty valve supplying, I think it's fuel, through the turbo pump to one of the engines there, the engine number 5. And right now, as of now, they're replacing the part. So they can pull the old part off, put the new part on, do some kind of testing, obviously, to make sure it's going to work okay, and then be ready to fly again. Now, if they can get all that done, and right now they're confident that they can, if they can get that all done in time, they're going to make a launch attempt this Tuesday morning at 3:44 in the morning. Should they need some additional time to check this valve and check the engine and make sure everything's okay, then they may wait until Wednesday. They've got an opportunity to fly Wednesday at 3:22 in the morning, because this is a launch to the space station. The launch time basically opens up about 20 minutes earlier every day. So that's what happened, and that's kind of where they're at right now. And again, it was a very dramatic, very exciting time to see that rocket let up. Now, of course, I only saw the video. Pat, you were out at the causeway.
Yeah, we were out on one of the causeways on the Cape, and it was...
What did you see? What was it like?
Well, it was very exciting. I mean, we're all getting enthusiastic. There was probably about, 100 of us or so on this causeway where we were, and we saw it crank up and the flame come out, and everybody gives a little shout and a cheer, and then the flame stops coming out, and it's silent because we're a couple miles away, so there's no noise yet.
Right.
So we see it shut down, and then everybody's like, uh-oh, now what do we do? And then a few seconds later, here comes the noise rumbling over us, and it ramps up, and then it just gets real quiet again.
Oh, my gosh. Now, were you able to see from there all, you know, when the abort happens, immediately the rocket releases all the built-up pressure? And liquid. Could you see that white gas come out?
Yeah, you could see the exhaust, the venting from the tanks.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow, interesting. Well, anyway, so that's kind of what's up there on SpaceX. Again, we wish them very well. We're going to take our first break now. When we get back, we'll be joined by Robert Perlman of Collect Space. Don't forget the phone lines are open. Email's ready for you. 321-768-1240. The email's spacetalking@AOL.com. If you've got any questions or comments about SpaceX or anything else. In the meantime, stay tuned. I'm Jim Benke. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. Again, 321-768-1240 is the number to call. To participate in our program today, you can also send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, I think it's time to lighten things up a little bit, at least not worry about so much of the heavy-handed space policy talk we've been discussing the last few weeks. Today on the program, we have gathered together probably some folks who, are probably filled with more generally useless information and trivia about the history of our space program than any of us would care to admit, and I hope to prove some of that a little bit later on in our program. Chief among that bunch is my next guest. We welcome Robert Perlman, a kindred spirit of mine. Robert and I once worked together at space.com. He is truly one of the most informed advocates of spaceflight in the space community today. He is the owner, operator, writer, editor, archivist, and probably a few other jobs he won't admit for the website Collect Space. And I am honored to call him a fellow space cadet. Robert, is that enough of an introduction for you? Welcome to the program.
That's far too generous. Thanks, Jim.
Good. Well, I'm so glad you're with me today. You know, because of the SpaceX abort, all of our plans changed. I know that you are in town here, but you're actually over in Orlando enjoying a day at Disney, so I really appreciate you taking an hour away from multiple rides on Mission Space at Epcot and being on the show today. So what's the weekend been like for you? Talk about your experiences yesterday with watching that abort and dealing with it.
Well, it was exciting, but it was also not unexpected. I mean, this is a test flight, and so there's a saying that if nothing goes wrong on a test flight, you haven't learned anything.
Yeah, really.
And so to their credit, SpaceX was the first to admit prior to the attempt that they had never gotten to a T-minus zero without a problem.
Yeah.
And so watching it, you sort of, I think up until the last 10 seconds, I thought, yeah, we're not going today. And then it looked like we were going. And, you know, and then listening to George Diller call out over 3, 2, 1, lift off. No, we have cut off.
Yeah.
So range of emotions. It was a very long day, and it hadn't even ended until, 10:30 in the morning. But we'll start it all over again on Tuesday. It did allow for this, SpaceX, you've scrubbed your launch. What are you going to do now? I'm going to Disney World.
So is the space age. Do you see any SpaceXers out there today?
I haven't, but I've gotten a couple of tweets from people saying that they're in the area.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, that was always the greatest thing about shuttle delays, too, is if anything, it helped our local economy for at least one or two more days. So, Robert, we appreciate you spending your money here in our state so that we don't have to pay income taxes. So, it's funny about, we've been talking about George Diller, Pat and I did a little bit ago too, and I just feel my heart goes out to him. Of course, you know, Robert, you didn't know this, but when he called a liftoff and I'm doing live radio, I called liftoff as well. That immediately took it back. It reminded me of the story actually of Bob Gordon from Martin Marietta. Do you remember Bob at all, Pat? Was that before your time?
That was before my time.
Well, he's famous for, I think it was a commercial Titan launch. Someone can call in and correct me, but I think it was a commercial Titan, or maybe it was earlier. And he called liftoff, and it didn't lift off. And he said, oh, and two big arms have just grabbed hold of it and pulled it back down onto the pad again. So anyway, Pat, Robert, I wanted to ask you, too, about the launch, because I'm always curious about what was the mood like amongst the other media folks that are out there. I saw the press site was just filled with folks who reminded me of, like, a busy shuttle launch.
It was pretty busy. It felt like a shuttle launch, to be honest. It sort of felt like being back in the midst of covering manned spaceflight.
Right.
But I think that it's a mixture. It's a mixture of different types of media. There are those who feel that this is the next step forward, the right step forward, and reported on it that way, and so are gung-ho for seeing SpaceX succeed. There are those who are very skeptical of this approach and think that the more traditional business model of a cost-plus contract should be what we are pursuing. And then there's those who don't really understand or don't really take a side either way of which direction might be best for the country moving forward. And so there's a lot of questions, and that comes out in press conferences, watching the press try to figure out how do you gauge what this means. Right. Is it a failure? Is it just a test flight that had a stumble? Is it a is this to be expected, or is it to be something that, you know, we should be more critical of?
Yeah, you know, and I wondered about after the abort if there was a lot of grumbling amongst some of the media. Some of those media were new to the whole scene, you know, and it's kind of funny. It's an unfortunate truth that when things like this happen, they're more angry that they either have to stay or that their travel arrangements have been goofed up, and somehow those emotions get transferred into their stories. Was there a lot of, you know, gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands after this abort? Were they okay with it? Were they upset? What did you think?
I think most sort of expected it, you know, sort of said, this is a rocket that's only launched twice before. This was going to be a third launch. The Dragon's only launched once before. I think there was a lot of people who expected it, but there was, if you watched some of the tech media, not the space media, but the tech media reporting on this, sort of a assumption that this has somehow been a failure. Mm-hmm. I saw some columns that described it as a howling countdown or a failed launch. That was the headline on the front page of Yahoo.
Oh,
and I don't think that's necessarily a fair characterization. I think anyone who's been like you, Jim, who've been following this so long, knows that, you know, we've been through more than enough delays and scrubs before to know that, all things considered, being able to find the problem a few hours after launch, being able to repair it overnight, and being in place to launch again at your next available window is actually a pretty rare thing.
Oh, yeah. When you consider the shuttle main engines had fired up and aborted like this, and certainly they've done that in the past, we would have been done for 3 weeks while they went out there and made the checks, made the inspections, and then went through the whole management review process.
Indeed. I mean, the fact that SpaceX was able to say, and they didn't need to do this, but the fact that they were able to say, if we needed to do the worst case scenario, swap out an engine, that they'd only need 2 days, and then they'd be able to make the next available window, which is Tuesday.
Yeah.
It was, you know, pretty amazing, considering that for a shuttle, that would be at least a week, if not longer, stand down.
Robert, this is one of those programs where I wish I had 2 hours, so let's move on to another topic. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk about Collect Space. You've been on the program before. We've talked about your background and whatnot, but remind folks about Collect Space and what you're all about.
Well, Collect Space was started in 1999 originally as a hobby site, but it grew into being the site for space history enthusiasts, whether you're a researcher or an author or an amateur researcher or a collector or a museum curator, to come together and share their knowledge. We focus in on space history and how it influences today's current events, and specifically how space exploration in general affects pop culture, where real space interacts with the everyday lives of everyone. So we'll cover, for example, with this SpaceX mission, we are covering, of course, the details of the abort and the retry, but we also have the details about how the student experiments on board are accompanied by student-designed space patches.
Right.
And also, we were able to get a hold of the list of souvenirs that are on board. It's a minor detail. It's certainly not mission-critical, but it makes it something that people can relate to.
Oh, I think it's one of the most fascinating parts of space, and that's why this whole collectible thing is great. You know, I mean, one thing, Robert, that I think is great about your site, let's go back to the Big Bang Theory in the season finale a couple of weeks ago, where Mike Massimino, NASA astronaut, basically has a guest starring role. It was much more than a cameo. Other than a little bit mentioned in some Hollywood media, you had the full interview with Mike talking about all the details on it, and I don't think anybody else would even think to cover it but you.
Well, it was great to be able to catch up with him. I think that it was important to highlight the fact that the show creators had gone beyond what they needed to. Most of the public wouldn't recognize a Soyuz, the inside of a Soyuz from the inside of a shuttle or any other set that they might have laying around. But the creators went ahead and, on Mike Massimino's suggestion and working with other NASA astronauts like Ron Garin and Mike Fossum, came up with a semi-realistic-looking Soyuz interior.
Yeah.
And that may have been only for one episode, but now I'm hearing, or at least reading in the trades, this idea that maybe they won't. Maybe they'll return next season and Howard Wolowitz will still be in space.
And it was incredible that you saw that fictional account on that Thursday night, and then like that next weekend, a real one lifted off, and you know, it was essentially the same exact kind of thing.
Indeed.
Which was really cool for us, Robert. Joe Acaba going up on the space station, first educator astronaut to make it to the space station. And did you know, a former teacher here at Melbourne High, which is just across the street from where I am right now. So a little local interest right there for us as well. Hey, Robert, we're coming up here on our bottom of the hour break, so I'm going to put you on hold. Stand by for just a little bit here as we do take our five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour. We'll get everyone caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. And then when we come back, we'll have something very special for you, our own Space Talk trivia quiz, pitting Robert and I against each other, courtesy of our host, Patrick McCarthy from Space Florida. And if you'd like to try and stump us with a trivia question, your call's welcome to 321-768-1240. Email spacetalking@AOL.com. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Bankey.
And welcome back, everybody, to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. And our phone lines and inbox, online inbox, open for your contributions, questions, comments. The phone number, 321-768-1240. The email address, spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, in the studio today with me is my friend Patrick McCarthy from Space Florida. We went to school at Embry-Riddle together, and for all these years, he and I have... Well, we know our space stuff. At least we think we do. And as you've already heard from Robert Perlman, who's on the phone with us today from, well, actually visiting Disney right now, but from the Collect Space website, Robert is generally regarded as the master of space trivia. Certainly, I'm already scared that he's going to outdo me on this. But in honor of Robert's visit today, we thought we would ask Pat McCarthy to come in and run a little Space Talk trivia quiz for us. And Robert, I know you're all set for this, so... Pat, take it away.
Well, and Jim, I think that your listeners need to know right up front that these questions and answers have been kept hermetically sealed in an empty mayonnaise jar on Vern and Glida Estes' front porch for safekeeping since last Saturday.
I bet Vern loved it.
All right, gentlemen, we have six categories.
Okay.
Now, we just flipped a coin to see who would go first, and Jim won. Robert, since you weren't here, unfortunately. But Jim... And, Jim, do you like to answer or do you like to defer?
I will answer the first question and leave the big pressure on Robert at the end.
All right. So, Robert, you want to listen to these categories as well. But, Jim, for your first question, please select from one of these categories. Cosmonauts and astronauts, space shuttle, social media, haven't we met before? After you, please. And where the wild things are.
Okay, I'm going with space shuttle first.
Space shuttle, very well. The question is, it's a two-part question.
Oh, great.
Spacecraft launched from the space shuttle have been sent to study what solar system bodies, other than Earth, and what were the names of the spacecraft?
Oh, gosh. Okay, Jupiter was Galileo. Venus was Magellan. And Ulysses was the sun. And I would say that based on the way your question is worded, that would be my answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Very
All right.
good, sir.
Very good. All right. Robert, that's one for me and zero for you.
All right, Robert, you get to choose from the remaining categories. And again, they are cosmonauts and astronauts, social media, haven't we met before, after you, please, and where the wild things are.
All right, I'll take my luck with social media.
I knew he'd go for it.
Social media. This one's too easy. But who was the first person to use the Twitter microblogging site from space?
That would be at Astro Mike or Mike Massimino.
Very good.
All right. There you go. Ding, ding for you, too.
Excellent.
I wouldn't have gotten that one, actually.
Well, since you were talking about
Mike just a
Big
moment
Bang
ago.
Yes, that might have come up. Okay, remaining categories for you to choose from, Jim. Cosmonauts and astronauts. Haven't we met before? After you, please. And where the wild things are.
Okay, I'm going with where the wild things are.
Excellent choice, sir. Uh-oh, but this is a multiple choice question.
Makes
it a little bit easier. Which of the following birds has not made headlines related to space shuttle launches? A, northern flicker woodpeckers. B, eastern scrub jay. C, great horned owls. Or D, turkey vultures.
Scrub jays.
Ding, ding, ding. Another correct answer for you, sir. If you'll remember.
I do remember.
Woodpeckers have pecked at the external tank insulation. And during one launch, a vulture was hit on the way up on liftoff.
That's right.
And that led to the Roadkill Ranger program at KSC.
Yep.
And horned owls have been nesting on pad 39 for a while. So that's an interesting one. All right, Robert, next for you, the categories remaining are cosmonauts and astronauts. Haven't we met before? And after you, please.
Well, the pressure's on, but I'll try cosmonauts and astronauts.
Another excellent choice.
Yep.
And the question is, and this one's a long one, so stay with me. Name this retired U.S. astronaut who flew on several space shuttle missions, helped develop EVA construction and maintenance techniques for the space station, is known for flying model rockets, and, in fact, was a member of the Board of Trustees of the National Association of Rocketry.
I will admit that model rocketry is not my forte.
Ooh, I've got a window here.
But I'm thinking back to who I've reported has attended model rocket competitions. Several shuttle missions, EVA experience.
Clock is ticking.
I didn't know there was a clock, too.
Yeah, well, we're trying to keep this to one segment, so...
All right, I will take a guess and say
Is it?
Jay Apt.
Oh!
Ding, 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 ding. You are correct. Excellent. Way to pull that one out of your hat there.
Absolutely.
And the other one we know to fly model rockets is Jerry Ross. And actually, he flew with Jay on STS-37.
That's right.
There we go.
The first spacewalk after Challenger. And fixed the Gamma Ray Observatory and scared all of us half to death.
Okay, Jim, the remaining categories are Haven't We Met Before and After You, Please.
You know, actually, I'm emotionally deflated here that he got Jay App, you know, and I almost would have picked Jerry Ross, except for you said elected to the board. And so, by the way, Jay is probably going to be on the program here in the next few weeks, we hope. Let's see. I'm going to go with, Haven't We Met Before.
Okay, it's another sort of long one. When the retired space shuttle orbiters Enterprise and Discovery recently traded places at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum's Udvar-Hazy Annex in Dulles, Virginia.
Correctly pronounced.
An astronaut was present who, it turns out, was the only one to have flown on both. Name the astronaut.
Joe Engel.
Very good.
That was too easy for me. Joe's a good friend.
Should have picked that category.
Yeah, really. Okay. Well, let us review here at this point as we go into the last category that the score is Jim 3 and Robert 2. And Robert, just to put the pressure on you here and take just a little more time in the segment, this is either going to end in a tie that allows us to not have bragging rights and just to be great friends forever as we are now, or I'm going to basically totally destroy you and be declared king of all space trivia for at least the first time in years, and we'll do this again in a year. So I'll claim my title for the next year. So the pressure's on, Robert. This is going on Facebook within moments. By the way, if you get it wrong, all right,
boy.
Pat, go for it. Last
okay,
category.
Robert, the category is called After You, Please, and this is a multiple choice question.
Ooh, goody.
Which of these folks was the first to fly on the shuttle? A. Pinky. B, Wubbo, C, Ulf, or D, Ox?
Ooh.
Can you repeat what number, what C was?
Ulf.
Okay.
Ulf. It's so Pinky,
Wubbo, Ulf, and Ox.
Oh, gosh. I know who I guess.
I know who I'm guessing. Can I phone a friend?
No. you got your friend on the phone right here, Robert.
All right, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess A, Pinky.
No.
Oh, boy.
No, it's not.
And and I'll give you the answer. Ulf Merbold of the European Space Agency.
I should have STS-9, right?
STS-9, that's right. And that was in November of 83.
Should have thought of that.
Pinky,
well.
Nelson and Ox van Hoften flew on 41C in April of 84.
Solar Max.
Yep.
And then Wubbo Ockels
flew
on 61A in October of 85.
Wow. So. Yeah, I remember Pinky and Ox doing Solar Max. Actually watched it on the TV at my church. It was a Sunday morning, believe it or not, back in Minnesota. And by the time I got down to Embry-Riddle and you and I were working on the Avion together, remember we had the I Love Wubbo. Yeah, the I Love Wubbo fan club and buttons that we put on. That was great. Okay, so final score, Jim Behnke, 3, Robert Perlman, 2.
I bow to you, Jim.
I am king of all space trivia for at least 1 year.
There we go.
I can't.
Jim needs ideas for another segment.
That's right. Robert, if you ever make it into the studio, we'll do it again. That'll be my promise to you. Next time you come to town, you come to the studio, we'll have a rematch.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so Robert, let's talk some more about Collect Space. Now, you know, your audience would have gotten a lot of these, I would imagine.
Oh, they would. I will never challenge my readership to a trivia contest because they will blow me out of the water. I have been more than impressed by just the breadth of knowledge that our readership and membership has. These are not all professional historians. They're not, a lot of them work in other fields unrelated to space altogether, but they've taken it upon themselves to, either because they own artifacts from the program or they had a lifelong passion for it, not unlike us, that they've read everything they can get their hands on. They've interviewed people. They've done their own oral histories with lesser known members, but no lesser members of space history.
Sure.
And really have come to encompass this. You know, they say social media or user created content. They have created a rich history that's beyond anything that that I could or anyone could produce on them by themselves.
There is so much of that kind of stuff online on your website. You know, we had Wayne Hale on a couple of weeks ago, and you know, Wayne is also a very good friend and you know, lead flight director of which color flight team, do you remember?
Wayne was Garnet?
No, turquoise, because he's from New Mexico. And turquoise flight. Well, he sent me a list. I wondered what all the different other colors were, and he sent me a list, and guess what? He pointed me to Collect Space.
Yeah, and
it was on there.
We're going to do a story, a feature story on all the
different
colors.
That's great. Robert, stand by. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll give the local launch forecast and finish up our conversation with Robert and Pat. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to Space Talk right here on, you know it, WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with a quick reminder that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, just search for Space Talk. And if you're on Twitter, look for Space Talking. And for one-stop shopping, just visit WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk, and get you up to date on all the things going on with the program. As we do continue with today's program, we're going to take a moment for our weekly look at the local launch forecast. We've already been talking about it, of course, today. The next launch from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station is the Falcon 9 rocket from SpaceX. As of the latest official update from the company, they are working hard to be ready to try again on Tuesday morning at 3:44 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The weather forecast right now predicts a 60% chance of acceptable conditions. A Wednesday launch attempt, if needed, would be at 3:22 a.m. Again, that also possible. We'll see what happens here as they continue to work to replace and retest this faulty valve that caused the abort. Whichever way it does go, we'll carry the launch attempt live on WMMB as we did for the attempt on Saturday. I'll come on the air about 5 minutes or so before the launch, so don't worry if you tune in much earlier and you're not hearing anything. We'll come on and let you know exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen with for the more or less instantaneous window again at 3:44. In case you're wondering what's next after the Falcon 9, when that one does get off the ground, the next launch from the Cape would now be targeted for June 18th, and that will be an Atlas V rocket carrying a satellite for the National Reconnaissance Office. We do not know what the launch time is for that. It's obviously a secret spy mission, but we'll announce a window for us when we get much closer to the date. For more information about all the various launches scheduled around the world, do jump on the web, as we mentioned, to WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. In our remaining moments, we wrap up our conversation today with Robert Perlman of Collect Space and Patrick McCarthy from Space Florida. Here on his own, though, as of course we want to make sure we have that disclaimer.
This is an unpaid appearance.
That's right. Despite the fact that Space Florida is an official sponsor of the show, so in a way you're always paid to be here.
Thank you. I understand.
I'll buy you a burger afterwards or something. Maybe we'll get an ice cream cone. Robert, let's talk some more about Collect Space with you in the remaining moments. One of the things that's interesting about your site to me is the astronaut sightings. And, you know, we've talked over the years about how astronauts, generally speaking, are not household names anymore. No one can name the six people that are on board the space station right now, at least no one outside the intimate space community. And even then, I would defy a lot of people who work at the Space Center to name all six. I couldn't name all six right now.
I couldn't pronounce all six.
But your astronaut sightings, boy, there are a lot of people that are interested in astronauts, and they just don't have to have walked on the moon. You know, if you flew in space, you're interesting to the folks on your website.
Yeah, and I think that in general, it's it offers, for those not familiar, Sightings is our calendar that tracks astronauts and cosmonauts throughout the world, and it lists their public events, their speaking appearances, and where you can go meet them. And I think a lot of people, when they first discover the calendar, are surprised, A, that there are so many astronauts out there making appearances every day, but that they're also very often not that far away.
Right.
And we've heard from educators and parents and others who say, you know, this was a game changer for them because they had always wanted to meet an astronaut and didn't know how. And here was the opportunity to find out that one was, you know, just 10 minutes away from their house. And so we track where they appear and make sure that all the events are appropriate for the public to attend. We don't want to have people crashing private events. So it's a way to really get the community active and to come out and celebrate these people who have gone to space to further our future in space.
And how is the world of space collectibles going these days? I keep wondering when I'm going to sell my astronaut autograph book and wait for the price to go up. You know, you've got some folks from the Apollo era that are passing on. You got folks that are charging a lot of money for autographs these days, and yet there's a lot of other things out there where people can plug in that really for low cost. Talk a little bit about that that space collectible world out there.
There is increased interest, and it's growing. I think the end of the space shuttle program really woke up not just collectors who had been focusing on Apollo era material, but people looking at the space shuttle now as something to collect as well, and we're getting to that point where the people who were alive for the first space shuttle missions are, and only that, who were born after Apollo, are reaching the nostalgia point, and that's what drives a lot of this. And from the market standpoint, you have a run of the gamut. You do have entry-level items that are still available that a new collector could get involved for just a few dollars. You can put together a very respectable collection, as one of our readers once pointed out, for $100 or less.
Yeah.
But if you have the money, you can attain some really stupendous items, some museum-quality artifacts that are now selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And some of that, you know, the most frequent question we get about space artifacts, the stuff that is flown in space, is especially from the U.S. program, is because all this material up to this point has been paid for by the U.S. taxpayer, well, how is it legal for someone to own it? And there are several different venues that goes through that it, where it can be legal. The government releases it, or the astronauts own it from their own collection. But that latter one had been called into question of whether the astronauts, especially the Apollo astronauts, could legally own the items that they kept from their missions.
Right.
And we're seeing that finally answered. Congress has taken it up in an effort to make it once and for all that the items that they were that they kept as mementos, that were meant at the time as mementos, but no paperwork was ever drafted up, will now become theirs free and clear.
And I think that's the way it goes, the way it should go. And Pat McCarthy, you know, it doesn't necessarily take a main purchase to get a space collectible. Tell him, do you have your favorite space collectible in your collection that you want to tell us?
Actually, no. I have quite a few, and it's hard to choose a favorite.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, mine is I have a 35-millimeter slide that my dad took of me as an 8-year-old watching Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and the first time I met Neil, I had him sign the side of the slide.
Very nice.
So that's my Robert. What's your favorite, real quick, in about 15 seconds?
It's a package of bread cubes that flew to the moon on Apollo 11. With Michael Collins, and Buzz. It was meant for Mike to eat. He didn't eat it. He brought it back. They're now they're now croutons, but they're but they're a historic piece, just the same.
Oh, that's incredible, Mike. Did you acquire it from Mr. Collins?
No, they were gifted away after the program was returned to Earth, and I obtained it from the estate of the person who it was awarded to. But Mike then signed the package.
Outstanding, Robert. Thanks for being on the show today. Go back and get in line at Disney and let me know how it goes. Okay,
will do.
All right, take care. Pat, thanks so much for being on with us today.
You're welcome.
Great. Next week on Space Talk, my guest will be former NASA astronaut Al Warden, Apollo 15 command module pilot and author of the book Falling to Earth and Apollo 15 Astronauts' Journey to the Moon. We'll be keeping talking about space collectibles because that was a big deal about what happened to him, and he'll be happy to talk about it. He also works closely with the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation. We look forward to having him on board. That is all for now. Space Talk is a production of Mila Solutions, brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Do join us again next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another live hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of the Best of Bill McLive. I'm Jim Bankey. We'll talk to you again real soon.